Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Are you a fan of young adult novels?
Have you ever wondered the stories behind the people who wrote your favorite young adult novels?
Then join author Eric J. Brown
and Alyssa Lube of Netflix's The Circle
every other Tuesday on YAOK.
Available on all podcasting apps.
Woo!
Welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. This week we are talking about a Kyle pick, which is Curtains from 1983. Fun fact about the movie Curtains. So Synapse put this bad boy on Blu-ray, but I guess Peacock just has the VHS PS rip to put on their streaming service. Holy crap. This was...
No.
I can't even tell you how I felt about the movie, because the whole time I'm like, this is the grainiest shit I've ever watched on an HDTV through a streaming site.
Well, so that is actually like semi the reason I, not semi, not like it's not the reason. It's actually very low on the list of reasons, but one of them is because I upgraded from the VHS PS to the Synapse and I haven't watched it yet. But I remember, the pure reason I picked it was because, as we've talked about many a time, or have had the VHS cover discussion before,
yeah,
Curtains is actually truly the one for me, but I never remember when we have that conversation.
Yeah.
You remembered when you were 15 minutes into this movie, and you're like, shit, this movie's terrible.
But no, here's the thing I will say, in defense of the Curtains VHS cover, I feel like it captures a lot more of what's actually in the movie than some of the other box art that I've looked at. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Funhouse doesn't have a jack-in-the-box wielding an axe anywhere in that movie.
Right.
At least this has a doll and a hag face that are both present on the box art.
Which, honestly, didn't realize that that was actually truly what was happening until I watched it this time. Like, I still, like, I was like, huh, there's no, like, real doll situation. Like, I knew that there was a doll, but I didn't get the old lady thing. Again, that graininess on the VHS rip is so atrocious. It's so dark. Like, it's so bad. Synapse did a good job.
Was it 2014 when Synapse put out their restore?
It was still early, because I still think I don't think it's a 4K transfer or anything. It's just HD transfer, but it's still...
That's funny, because I know for a fact that I have never seen the VHS PS cover or version of this. I have watched this movie 4 times now.
Have you really?
3 of them are for the show.
No.
Because there were 2 times in the past when I'm like, do I pick this for February, because of the ice skating scene, obviously.
Right.
And I was like, no, this movie's fucking boring. And then I was like, oh, Kyle picked it. Well, he's got something to answer for now.
Well, I don't know. There's a lot that I'll say about this movie. Boring is not one of those things, though.
How?
I feel like
this movie,
is so insane. I was so confused. This movie... here's my defense.
You hate Canadians. You hate Canadians.
This was my very first watch. I've never seen Curtains before.
Oh, how is it that I've seen this movie more than both of you combined?
This is my third. So
okay, so I've seen it as many times.
I mean, but still, I'm surprised that you said 4. 4 was not the number.
That's not the number I want in my life. You know,
I feel like I will definitely watch this movie more than this time. I was like, this was fun enough. Like, it's not. It's so funny, because the story that I heard. The story that I heard was like they had this huge success with Prom Night.
Yep.
And then Terror Train didn't do well. And they're like, we need another hit like Prom Night, but we'll make a slasher film for adults. I feel like this has way more in common with Terror Train than it does Prom Night. But I also want to point out that I think Prom Night is more boring than both of those movies. Like, Prom Night is slow as shit.
Yeah, Prom Night's slow, and I can't really... When I say I don't know, I'm not arguing with you. I truly don't know because I saw Prom Night all of one time.
Yeah.
And I saw it when I was fucking 14 years old, and I never went back to it.
Yeah.
And then I've seen Terror Train all of one fucking time, and I think that I was watching it thinking that we would do it for the show. Man, those movies are fucking boring. And that's it's so funny because the worst thing that a horror movie can do is bore you. And, like, this movie just... I don't understand how you guys are, like, ambivalent about this movie because I actively dislike this film.
Oh my god.
And I don't know why I've seen it four fucking times.
I don't know
it's
either.
Horror Movie Night's responsibility as an entity outside of me to make it better. Like, why have I done this to myself?
Yeah.
I don't want to take responsibility. Well, everyone else needs to take responsibility.
Kyle picked it. But I'll
take full responsibility. Yeah. I don't think it's great.
But that's what I'm saying is you're like ambivalent about it.
No. I still have a positive scale that breaks down a few things. I have like batshit insane. I have excellent. No, I would say I have batshit insane, which also coincides with like masterpiece. Like, they're two separate things, but I would say that they're on the same level of the positive scale.
Yeah.
And then I have great.
Kyle's five stars fall into two buckets. And it's an absolutely made movie or it's an insane
buckets,
movie.
Actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you know I'm still great. Like, somewhere the trash and the regular movie scale still, like, they kind of cross again. And I think that's where great and good exist. Because so, like, I think it's a good movie. I think it's an interesting movie. I think it was fun to watch, even for this third time for me. Like, I got to watch it and, like, not forget the middle part.
Yes.
Like, after the ice skating scene, like, the ice skating scene.
I mean, the
scene
ice skating scene is the top of the mountain.
That's really the point of this movie.
Right?
You know, if we talk about movies that are clip shows, this movie only has that going for it. The rest is melodrama.
So, see, I don't...
It's true.
See, you're seeing melodrama, but I don't know. A melodrama does not have a scene like that fucking scene with the agent in the office where he's just like,
oh, that guy's funny.
Out of his mind. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, I'm just like
funny lines from the first 15 to 20 of this, but like not after that. I didn't. This isn't the least notes I've ever taken, but it's not a whole lot of notes. And my last actual note is, the skating kill is all this movie has going for it. Yeah, he was definitely a highlight. But he has a line that I love, and he goes, "Relax, lady. The man has strange ways, but he gets things done." And and then the woman's like his client, you know? She's like, "God, I look like shit." And I'm just looking at her. I'm like, "Well, that perm isn't doing any help for you, you know? Like, it's bad. The hair in this is so bad. Even the cutest girl, the ice skater, her hair is atrocious."
Right. And then, well, especially when you get them all at that table, that dinner table scene, you're just like, my God.
But the thing is so there's one thing I do have to give them credit for in the casting, beyond Red being a complete asshole. John Vernon, is that his name?
Yeah, John Vernon.
I do like the fact that they... So, okay, for the wizard behind the curtain of this movie, long story short, it was production hell. It took 3 years to make this movie. It was being shot in 1980, and then it was shelved because they did the first 45 minutes. There were so many reshoots, rewrites, that the original writer-director, doesn't matter.
Writer-director.
Quit and said, take my name off of it. And then, so it got shelved for a while, and then they basically did more reshoots, rewrites over the next two and a half years, and just shat it out on a quick American release in March of 1983, and then it took another year for it to hit Canadian cinema. But all of that said, I wonder what the original product would have looked like if it would have been the original director's vision, because the casting was actually quite interesting, where It was supposed to be a slasher whodunit. You know, like, yeah, it was supposed to be, because all the women have dark hair and blue eyes. So that when whoever the killer is wearing the mask, it always, you don't know who it is, because you see those close-ups of the eyes. That was that's something that I noticed in this watch of it, because I was like, I have to find something positive to say about this beyond the ice skating.
That's good.
And I really do think that there is some good that could have come of this movie if it hadn't have been an absolute nightmare to create.
Well, so much so, this is my favorite fact, because I've never seen this before. So much so that, like, the credits even scroll as Act 1 and Act 2.
Yeah.
To break out the two different crews that shot this movie. Which, I mean, it is fitting with, like, this being about theater and filmmaking and stuff like that, that you do.
Right.
That.
Like, but, well, that's the thing. I feel like you're talking about development hell, right? Or production hell, rather. The end product, which I hear you about it, that you feel that is boring. And
but
I,
it could be way worse.
But as far as, like, I mean, the whodunit aspect of it kind of works. Like, all of those, the Act 1, Act 2 credit thing kind of works.
It actually
There's, like, some decent slasher stuff.
The reason why it doesn't work, and this was what the critics criticized in 83 when it came out, was one of them said something to the effect of, don't even bother trying to figure out who it is, because it doesn't matter.
Because it is the quickest twist.
Exactly. That's why they're like, you can't even
rewind
it. Because you know, I really do like that final scene, because Samantha is like the older actor who's like, I killed
Brooke and Stryker.
Yeah. Thank you.
Stryker.
I killed them. And it doesn't even matter. Call the police. And
yeah, Patty's like, well, I killed everybody else.
There is one really good scene where, a really good shot where you see her face fall, because she's like, I killed everybody else for no fucking reason, because now I'll never get to be Audra. Because you killed the fucking director. And then that's why she kills Samantha. And so, I mean, there are cool moments. They are so very far few in between.
And they're short. They are short moments. Yeah. I will give you that. Like, they are.
This is definitely not as bad as the worst shit we've watched this year, which is Howling 6, New Moon Rising.
Seven.
Yeah. Fuck. Yeah. See?
Well, which has a lot of 6.
Yeah.
But enough of 6 to consider it maybe 6.
The ending of this movie was changed just a little bit, but I actually wish they'd kept
the alternate original version. Oh,
the alternate version.
Because.
Yeah, so the movie that we've all watched, it ends with Patty doing her stand-up routine in the sane asylum, but the original ending was her doing the stand-up routine in front of a room filled with all the corpses laid out in chairs, which just, like, I don't know what...
That would have done it for me, man.
Dude,
that would have been...
It, like, we all talk about how much we love Tourist Trap, like... I don't know what it is with me, but you give me any movie that ends with a person who's clearly lost their grip on sanity driving around with the corpses of their friends or whatever, I'm just like, hell yeah.
Dude, well, you know what other movie has something like this that would be great? Texas Chainsaw Next Generation.
Oh.
Where
see,
you walk
I had
in
one
and all the corpses
too,
are in the... Yeah.
And I was thinking Happy Birthday to Me.
Yeah.
Oh,
which we have never done on this show.
Was that horror or Reddit Horror Club?
That was a Reddit Horror Club
episode.
Oh,
fuck, guys. Okay, next time my pick falls on my birthday, doing it. Okay, next time whoever's pick
falls on a birthday, we'll do Happy
falls
Birthday.
Falls on a birthday.
Yeah.
This Blu-ray has a short documentary that has behind the scenes
for Happy Birthday to Me
stuff. I'm sorry, no, on Curtain.
For Curtains.
I was looking to see if on the Blu-ray there was anything about an alternate version.
I think it was changed before they filmed it. Yeah,
okay.
Like it.
All right.
But I, because they were probably
any
just
chance
like,
I get to see corpses in a theater or something.
Dude, I love it. I love it so much. And apparently, this is. I thought this was kind of cool that the actress who played Patty actually wrote her own stand-up jokes
it's
and performed
terrible,
them in
but,
an actual comedy club. Like, but I'm like, I appreciate that at least a little bit. I do think that they're. Look, I'm not saying this movie's done well. I'm just saying that there's movies that are done worse.
This is very like middle of the spectrum, I think. For
this is
both
no
of
Mutilator.
Us,
you know what I mean?
Like
I'm not walking away
good.
From this like Mutilator where I'm like, oh,
Mutilator,
how
you don't
has
even
this
know
movie
her.
Been in my life?
You don't even know her, Matt. Stop talking about her that way.
That stand-up kind of bookend of this film it actually made me feel quite comfortable in some life decisions, because I'm pretty sure that when I was 1 year old when this came out, I would have still fucking hated stand-up. So it's not just recent stand-up. I have always yeah. hated stand-up.
It's yeah. stand-up from the jump. Yeah.
yeah. And so, Lynn, the woman who played Patty, Lynn, I've lost
Yeah, she
it.
Was in Black Christmas as well, the
yes.
original Black
yes.
Christmas.
She yeah. is giving straight Maggie Gyllenhaal vibes.
Yes.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. 1,000%.
Yeah. And you know what? I always also forget Samantha Egger, who was from The Brood,
yes.
is not Meg Foster.
From Hellraiser?
American Werewolf.
Oh, yeah.
Well, actually, I don't know if Meg... Now I'm... See, no, because there's another one who looks exactly fucking like
That's the
both
point
of
the casting. That's why they all look similar.
It's the eyes are...
When I was watching her, I was like...
Piercing.
Is she... I was like, is she Julia? From Hellraiser? I was like, yeah. no, she's not Julia. I knew she wasn't.
She reads
but
that.
She could
But
be.
Julia, well, another mother role from The Brood, which we did talk about.
We have never done The Brood. We have done
well,
very
the Brood's,
little
honestly, the
Cronenberg
too,
on this show.
The Brood, well, because The Brood's too good. Scanners is too slow. But I might put Scanners 2 on.
Well, Scanners 2 is also on my list, so you can have it. Please, if you pick that instead of another curtain, I am you, here for it.
I just want to. I'm not drinking a Molson Ice, but I am drinking a Flannel Friday from Harpoon. It just felt warm, and it's a little more New England than Canada. But it's,
damn,
it
I wish
works
that I had
this.
A flannel mouth from Blake's Hard Cider to go along.
Oh,
with
we could
it.
Be flannel together.
Yes. Well,
and
the
then Matt,
thing,
you just have to wear one.
Yeah.
I'll just drink a water and wear a flannel.
Yeah. So, Matt, real quick though, that the thing is that. This movie is super Canadian because we all enjoy the simple things in life, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, some Mr. Bubble, some bath wine, and then some Peeping Tom fully decked out in acid-washed jean. And then they have a little bit of that CNC, consensual, non-consensual sex, which I know that we're not supposed to kink shame on this show, but I just want to come out and say that CNC is a really fucked up kink and I hate it so much.
Yeah, no, it's a weird call.
Carly, like, semi-enjoyed this movie, but as soon as that came up, she was like, I don't fucking know about that. And I was like, I
That's
agree.
That's the first 15 minutes.
Because not only do I agree, I also feel like in 2022, I have faith that there are healthier relationships that, if they do include that, are not this particular one from 1983.
I hate to break it to you, but you have not been on TikTok enough, because I only know that it's called CNC mm-hmm. now because of yeah. fucking TikTok. I had to look it up on
oh,
like Urban
not CNC.
Your
Music
TikTok
Factory?
Recommendations are dramatically different than mine.
No, mine are all dogs and then weird kinks, and I don't know what it's hearing me say out loud. But
dogs and kinks.
It has to be tied to horror movie night recordings, because like mine are just like, here's some random stand-up comedians and here's some music videos from the 2000s. And I'm like, perfect. This is
I'll
exactly what I come
CNC
here for.
I'll take the CNC over the stand-up. That's all I'm saying, guys.
Bro, anyway.
When you keep saying CNC, I keep thinking
music
CNC
factory.
Music Factory. And yeah. I cannot stop.
Everybody
and it makes me...
now. Everybody kink now.
I want to get legitimately serious in defense of Curtains.
Okay.
And this is not saying that Curtains is a good movie at all. But
okay.
I do think... that in 1983, it is saying a pretty interesting thing about being a woman actress or just a woman in the entertainment field throughout this movie, because we're watching one woman who has been basically forced out of roles because she is too old now to yeah. play those roles. You've got the director who's basically treating the auditioning thing as his own personal
casting
hookup
couch.
Line,
yep.
and you've got the comedian who's desperately trying to prove that she's more than a comedian but struggling to be taken seriously in any like legitimate roles. And I'm like, that's shit that's still happening in 2022.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this is, it's kind of the same thing with, like, you know, it was a bad defense for Brian when he tried to talk about it in Scream 3. And I'm not saying it's a good defense on Curtains, but if we're going to give any positivity to anything, the fact that even in 1983 they were making a film that definitely isn't saying that this is, and they're not, I mean, even the agent, you know, as much as the agent's funny, the agent really does represent this concept that he treats her like a lower life form client of his. Like, he's cracking jokes about her and like not taking her career at all seriously. And I can't help but think, and man, I'm feeling those one-star reviews about to roll in. But if he was talking to an actor, one of his male clients, he wouldn't have been throwing so much bullshit and joking around at it.
Well, that's why the actual lead actor counterpart is a piece of trash.
Yeah.
And not paid attention to at all. Like, he's the counterpart to that whole thing where he's not clearly even given a shit about, even though he's drinking and really kind of like fucking, he's got a bad energy.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
He's
I'm,
got
not, bad saying, energy, I'm not saying that period. This is a good movie. I'm not going to argue this is a good movie, but I do think that this movie actually does carry some substance to
but
it, despite the shittiness.
Like, that's the problem, Matt. That's what's so frustrating about this fucking movie and why I actively dislike it is that it has I don't want to say a good message, but it's got an important message in 1980, as well as my entire life later, which is depressing. But I feel like the message is watered the fuck down. And I also think that the pacing is absolutely god-awful. And at the end of the day, it's so hard to like and recommend a movie that is hard to watch.
No, this is... Yeah. Here's what I will say about this movie to explain how bad the pacing is. I'm not sure if either one of you tried to read the Wikipedia page while watching the movie, but the Wikipedia puts the events of the movie in a more logical placement than it actually is in the movie. Like,
that's not the first or last time that's happened or will
happen.
No, I feel like that happens more often than
like,
we want.
It literally feels like through the production hell and editing insanity or whatever, that this movie is like almost out of order in the way that it is like being presented to you. And like someone on Wikipedia was like, all right, let me lay this out in like a chronological order so this is more easy to follow for everybody. But I will say, like, we talked about the pond scene. I also really like the hag mask. I think it's a good mask.
It's
like,
a good
mask. I wish that like
Trick
or Treat Studios would put out
that at a con. Have you ever seen anybody do it? Okay, you know what? I gotta find that fucking mask and do it because I have the stature to be a woman.
Yeah.
You know, hag mask
Bro,
with a sickle.
I love you. You do. You should absolutely
I have very sensual hips, guys.
Yeah. And that's what attracted me to you in the first place.
And much like Kesha, his hips
that's what
do
made
not
me say
lie.
Yes to this podcast. Sorry, Matt.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Are you a fan of young adult novels?
Have you ever wondered the stories behind the people who wrote your favorite young adult novels?
Then join author Eric J. Brown
and Alyssa Lube of Netflix's The Circle
every other Tuesday on YAOK.
Available on all podcasting apps.
Woo!
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass to Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come baby come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
Well, Kyle, I feel like we've said all that we can about curtains. In fact, I think it's curtains for this discussion. So, double feature, buddy. What would you be watching with this?
Yeah, look, again, on the scale of movies, I think this is on the positive good scale, which means that I have to pair it with something far worse, which means that I'm going to go with a movie called Don't Look in the Basement. And Don't Look in the Basement is about a nurse who shows up at a very clearly a politically incorrect home for people with mental and emotional disabilities, which is I'm not even saying that correctly, but so forgive me. But they're going to a nut house, as they would probably say. Okay. In the movie, right? And
one
but then
decade very, earlier.
Yeah, yeah, and very much sort of in the vein of like, you know, Asylum, which would be an anthology movie that came out later. We're not quite sure who's. We get to a point where like we're not sure who's crazy and who's not. We do, because it's a bad movie. We get it. But there's just a lot of like everybody's in this house and everybody's sort of like playing a character. That is fun for me, and it would be to me it would be a good pairing.
Yeah. Also, Scott, I want to hear your double feature, but I also want to throw out something that we didn't really mention. This movie's also really tame on its violence, all things considered. You don't
I
see
think that
anything
it was,
in this.
It was, there were other scenes that got left on the cutting room floor, like the guy that was supposed to play the male lead in Audra was originally going to be murdered on a jet on a snow ski and get, or set on fire or something like that, and get like launched through the cottage window at one of the characters, but instead they show him face down in the hot tub. There was a lot of stuff like that where I think that they were really trying
because
to
the
serve
Wikipedia,
two masters.
Yeah, the Wikipedia describes the ice, like the pond kill is like, and then she's violently decapitated, and I was like, all right,
yeah,
let's
you
pay
don't
attention
see
to this,
any
and then
of
I
that.
Didn't see anything. I was like, all right, well, whatever. All right,
I
Scott,
just
double
love
feature.
I really love the concept of that scene, and yes. And it's just, it's great, you know, like, and it makes sense where the person who just got stabbed in the fucking arm is bleeding out and they're like losing it and they're like trying to hide and then they just get, you know, killed. So I mean, I really like that scene, and I think
it's a great scene.
The fact that that scene and how cool the hag mask looks in that scene, like the villain design is like way better than this movie
has any right to have. Yeah.
Yeah.
For
like
sure.
It,
yeah.
It really does. But
well, when you said that thing about the clip show, it really clicked. I was like, yeah, you're absolutely right. Like this is that scene's it.
But there's
maybe,
not enough.
Maybe the car with the doll, but like,
well,
it's not
I
like a kill
that scene too,
just...
and I know that Matt liked that scene because anything with creepy dolls, Matt's all about.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially with mannequins more than dolls. But yes, any
yeah,
of
yeah.
it.
Yeah, but I also don't understand why they add. Like, I think that's something from the original screenplay that we'll never understand why that was like an important part of
no
the thing.
There's a lot
of the
things
plot,
that didn't
but,
make sense.
Like,
but.
And how did that make it? Like, why did? So how did Patty know the first blonde girl, who's the only one who doesn't have brown hair, by the way? I mean, I guess that Samantha's got red hair, but she still has blue eyes, or bluish green. So, I mean, it still counts.
Well, maybe
but,
she caught that and was like, well, I got to get rid of this girl because everyone's going to know it's not her right away.
Or it's
well, she
blow
still
my
had
whole
blue eyes.
She said all the people in the movie theater will know.
Yeah, yep. Guys. Can't let that cat out of the bag. Anyway, I don't know why she would have taken that doll. So that girl had a nightmare with the doll in it, wakes up, and then gets stabbed to death in her apartment in New York or wherever. And then Patty takes that with her.
Yeah, somehow, like it was almost as if Patty knew that it was part of the nightmare. It's very odd.
Yeah, so
very odd.
I mean, it's
now,
not that big of a deal,
trend.
But it's just it's frustrating for me. So anyway, my double feature is going to be the same concept done slightly better, but not much better, Stage Fright. Much better
yep,
soundtrack.
That was
the
my
thing I'm
choice.
Go with.
Not the meatloaf. Wait, the meat. Not,
no,
not
no,
the
no,
Stage
the
Fright 2017 or whatever. Not yeah. the remake, but the original 80s. I think it's 88, 89.
Have we watched that?
We have never done that. It's worth an episode of Horror Movie Night.
Yeah, especially we're all Scott. Did you do theater?
Did I? Yeah. I was a theater nerd.
Okay.
I actually was. So Matt was tech crew. Yeah. I was. I did more of the acting and less of the musical. Like, I wanted to be in musicals, but I would only ever get like a solo instead of a lead part. And so I would do my solo, and then I'd just be in the chorus for the rest. But I never. Yeah. One of my bigger parts was we did Harvey, and I was the doctor.
All right.
In Harvey.
Right on.
And so that was probably my biggest part in high school, but I never got a big part in any of the musicals, and we never did like cool musicals. Like the biggest musical scene that I ever did was the Beautiful Girls song from like Good News or whatever. I mean,
sure.
Yeah, I was gonna say I remember we compared musicals the one time, and my school definitely had some more interesting ones because
interesting musicals, but just not when I was in high school.
Yeah, that's
like,
what I mean.
Little Shop when I was in junior high or some shit, and it's not like they're gonna do it 4 years later when I'm in high school.
Yeah. Well, that's why I refused to do. That's why I refused to do Stage Crew my senior year, was because they were doing Grease again after just like 3 or 4 years of the previous production. I'm like, you don't need to.
You gotta find some more obscure shit.
I only acted in one. Carly was theater through and through. I only ever acted in one. It was the musical my senior year. It was The Wedding Singer, which was a fucking blast.
That sounds like so
they
much
made
fun.
They made a musical out of The Wedding Singer.
I'm pretty sure honestly, the dude from Fountains of Wayne wrote the music for it.
Okay. So I'm gonna take back my cringing face. That might actually be good.
So and then Stephen Lynch, who technically came from a comedy background, but he does like music comedy, like he does songs and stuff, which it's kind of it's a fun musical. I mean, we had to make it a high school version of it, but that was my taste of high school theater after I finally got over being a Satanist to be able to reinstate myself in society. And was just in time to graduate.
All right, so my double feature, I'll keep it short and simple. I had Stage Fright written down similarly to Scott. Sorry. But I will. No, I had a plan B. That's why I let you go first anyway. I will go with a much better movie that also tackles a lot of the struggles of the art world, Phantom of the Paradise.
Ooh, great choice.
Yeah.
Nice.
All right.
Nice.
Kyle, what have you watched, read, listened to, et cetera, that you want to tell people to go check out?
Yeah, I mean, it's not anything for anybody to go check out. Yeah. I just want to give a shout out. We screened The Woodsman at a festival called Shauna Shea Film Festival in Worcester, Massachusetts, and we were part of the closing night block, which had a mix of
Were you there for
the program? What?
You were there for that day?
Yes.
In Worcester?
Yeah. I was able to go, which was fun to be able to just see it again with a crowd. And Skip Shea, the programmer over there. So quick thing, Shauna Shea Film Festival is a nonprofit. There's a Shauna Foundation. It's a nonprofit that honors Skip Shea, a filmmaker and the programmer of Shauna Shea Film Festival. It honors his daughter, who was who he had lost in a tragic accident in '99, and she, I believe, I want to say she was in high school at that point, but she was a very sort of like independent artistic spirit that they wanted to honor and build scholarships upon, and really focus their energies now on women in film and experimental film and fringe cinema and stuff like that. And this is their 10th anniversary this year, and Skip has been a champion of not only my film and Bill, my filmmaking partner, our films, but filmmakers and creatives in New England and beyond. There's a lot of stuff that will eventually screen there that has screened there that'll come out, like a feature called Chicken House that was also at Chattanooga. Basically, I just want to say that I saw Lynn Lowry speak and accept a Lifetime Achievement Award, and seeing her, and she's from Shivers, primarily for me is where I remember her from Shivers. She was also in George Romero's The Crazies or Season of the Witch. She's very like, and she was also in I Drink Your Blood. If you see her, you would recognize her. She has this very distinct face. But she was there to accept the Lifetime Achievement Award, and she was fucking hysterical. So there's this sort of like classic Hollywood or like classic artist motif that she started to like present that I was like, oh my God, this woman's going to go on forever about shit that does not matter, right? Like, There's this cliche about old time actors talking about the good old days, and she was not that. She is still a spitfire, and she goes out and she acts in independent stuff for independent filmmakers. She's so fucking fun. Look, I was in a shorts block. I don't know when the shorts block were going to be out, but just go into your local film festival, even if it was just for a shorts block or for a feature. Get an individual ticket if you don't want to do the full badge. Just go see what's in your area. Like, Just go see it. It's the fucking best.
Yeah. Oh, that reminds... Actually, while you're talking about film festivals, I do want to just throw this out there because I just saw this information. So this is coming out in mid-November, but just about 2 or 3 weeks ago, a movie that I saw 4 years ago at Fantastic Fest
and thought would
never see the light of day is now on Hulu. It's a movie called Worm, spelled W-Y-R-M.
Oh, dude, I've been wanting to watch that for 4 years.
Yeah, it is not a horror movie. Fantastic Fest is, you know, a genre, I guess is the way to... But the concept of Worm takes... It's almost like... Like a Napoleon Dynamite mixed with like a post-apocalypse, or not even that, just like a weird, like alternate futuristic thing. So it feels like it's in the 80s in all of its like clothing and its style. It's got that very monotone sense of humor that Napoleon Dynamite had, but it takes place in this world where everything is exactly the same as our world, except that everyone has a collar around their neck that does not come off until they have their first kiss. And it's about the last kid in his grade to still have the collar around his neck, trying to get his first kiss to get the collar off.
That's cute.
And it's just a really unique way to do a coming of age story. And I did get to interview the director. You can find it in the back catalog of the podcast. If you're on the Facebook group, I'll be sure to have, I will have posted that interview after it finally appears on Hulu. But, you know, it's clearly from a very personal story of like him talking about struggling to get his first kiss and being like, and all I could think about was how much worse it would be if everybody knew, like if there was like a branding on me to show that I was the only person right. that was like not finding love. So it's a very good movie. But that is not my what did I watch this week, actually. But what I will promote, because I am really, really enjoying this, and I'm imagining the season will be done by the time this episode comes out, but I don't know how many episodes they were planning to produce of this. The Beavis and Butthead revival on Paramount Plus is some of the funniest Beavis and Butthead content that has ever come out. It is, I don't know why watching them watch music videos like WAP are so entertaining to me, but like, and they're good, and they take it in the like Mike Judge is just a genius. Like the like, whatever you imagine Beavis and Butthead watching WAP to be, he takes it in such a different direction because the video starts playing and they just start talking about how the video feels like a Zillow house demo, and then just start doing a role play of like Butthead being interested in purchasing the house and Beavis as the real estate agent. And there's just a point where he's like, excuse me, are there any whores within this house? And he's like, oh, so many. Like, it's just like the Mike Judge is just so fucking funny. I think I sent you guys all that like 5 second clip that I was like, this is Horror Movie Night in a nutshell. And it was,
I didn't watch it because I don't like Beavis and Butthead, but I respect
so
you.
They're talking about animation and Beavis is like, hey Butthead, you brought up Pixar and it got me thinking. Dixar. And then Butthead just looks at him and goes, God damn it, Beavis, you've still got it. And it's like, if that's not the sense of humor of every Horror Movie Night episode, I don't know what is. But yeah, there's usually been one or two lines per episode that have me like legitimately unable to not laugh out loud. So that's on Paramount Plus. It's worth checking out. I
watched them in the escape room and it's hysterical and I love it, but just more on paper. Like for me, it's equally funny on paper as it is
in
the
practice,
episode.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like, if I just let my brain go on Beavis and Butthead in an escape room, it wouldn't have been the episode, but it would have been just like, it's still funny to me.
Oh yeah. That's I think the first or second episode, but yes, the premise of the escape room episode is that they literally can't figure out which door they're supposed to walk into and walk into the bathroom and are like, holy crap, this escape room looks just like a real bathroom, and just start wandering the bathroom trying to find clues on how to escape.
And they can't push the pole door to get the fuck out.
It's great. But all right, Scott, what do you got to take us home, baby?
You know, a couple months ago when I was raving about Ninth House by Leigh Bardugo,
yep.
Megan read the Shadow and Bones series, and her best friend / college roommate came to visit a week or two ago and was like, have you guys watched Shadow and Bone on Netflix? And I said, no, I have no interest. And Megan was like, well, I'm almost done with the book series. Why not? And so we started watching it. And It looks amazing. It is such a cool. I love the mythology of the world. It's kind of high fantasy, but like historical fiction high fantasy. You know, it's not like wizards and dragons. It's like wizards and czars. It looks cool as fuck. I love the. I mean, it's fun to watch, but watching it with someone who just recently read the books sucks because they changed everything about the fucking books. But it's fun. I'm really looking forward to season two coming out. I'm assuming they'll truncate the second half of book two and all of book three into the second season. They'll just do the two seasons. And they're also adding. So the interesting thing was that Leigh Bardugo was the. I don't know if she was executive producer, but she had a production credit of some sort with the entire series. I guess there are like two companion books that go along with Shadow and Bone. So there are five books total. I didn't know anything about this. Neither did Megan. But really, the show leans very heavily on the companion series. And so it's kind of like she rewrote the storyline to make it a little bit more cohesive. And, you know, I really liked the characters from the companion series. It's just, it looks great. You know, like when Netflix gets it right, they get it really right, and it's real fun. So I am not going to be reading the series, and so the worst thing that I have to do is just listen to Megan be like, this is totally wrong, and then I'm like, fuck, I guess that would be a lot better the way that it should have been in the book. Yeah. So but aside from that, it's really fun to watch. You can turn your brain off, and especially if you haven't read the series.
That was Curtains from 1983 or 1980 or 1984, depending on what countries you live in. We will be back next week with even more Horror Movie Night goodness.
Are you a fan of young adult novels?
Have you ever wondered the stories behind the people who wrote your favorite young adult novels?
Then join author Eric J. Brown
and Alyssa Lube of Netflix's The Circle
every other Tuesday on YAOK.
Available on all podcasting apps. Woo!
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.